Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hello, this is Kirk Gray.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability.
Hey, Fred. Kirk. We were just talking about, I guess you kind of brought up the subject, reliability measurement or what are goals? What did we say?
Specifications.
Reliability specifications.
Right. So you mentioned something when we were kind of chatting back and forth about the crazy weather you have out there in Colorado.
Oh, yeah. It's about to change dramatically.
High 70s to the snowstorm tomorrow. But that's why you pay the big bucks to live there.
Yeah.
You get what you pay for.
If you don't like spring today, don't worry. Winter's tomorrow.
That's right. We'll just skip these seasons and move right ahead.
Yeah.
You know, so the calendar really doesn't do you guys much good other than in a rough sense, right? You know,
a rough sense, yes.
Yeah. You know, but when you know, and you've worked with companies and worked on product development teams and stuff, and one of the first things that's created by some marketing guy or somebody, you know, a team of folks that have the pulse of the customer and whatever, somebody comes up with a document that's a requirements document, right? And sometimes it's called a marketing requirements document, and others are called product requirements document, but it's a list of, well, it should be kind of this big and it should look this way and it should do these things. And here's some constraints. It shouldn't be too heavy, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it could list hundreds of requirements.
And it should never fail.
No. One of the things I've run into when I see these documents, I always look for the reliability stuff, right? So somewhere in there, it says it's going to have a 2-year warranty.
Yes.
Right. And then on page 75, it says it's going to have 50,000 hours MTBF. And then on page 79, it says that, you know, it should work in outdoor hand garment. And I was like, all right, let's do a little math here. If you actually achieve your MTBF spec that you guys don't even know what it means, you're going to have 20% failures in 2 years. Is that how much warranty you want to pay? Is that what you're trying to achieve? A 20% field failure rate?
Probably not.
And no. And so that I'll try to sidestep the whole MTBF thing here.
Yes.
But usually it's scattered. There's somewhere it says, here's what it's supposed to do. Usually they get that. It's supposed to, when you push this button, the little green light comes on.
Well, let's talk about what you would recommend as a metric or goal or reliability specification. How would you term it, Fred?
I'd say it's the definition of reliability from the engineering point of view. It's what's the function, right? And usually there's a whole list of functions. So, you know, it's the little green light comes on and it should do that successfully, you know, without failure. For 5 years, some duration.
Specified time and a specified environment.
An environment and a probability. So it should work 95% of the time or 90% of the time or 99.9% of the time, whatever is. And the values then, you can use different durations, right? So usually companies, the ones I've worked with, they often have out-of-box failures or early life failures, right?
Right.
And they say, we really don't want it. We want to have a very high successful installation turn on rate or whatever they want to call it.
Well,
and they'll
sure.
set a target for that. Right.
And what company wouldn't want that?
Well, there's a few.
okay.
And then set a target that's related to your warranty. And that's a financial decision as much as anything else. It's like, how much is it going to cost you to repair your system or restore it or replace it or whatever your plan is? Mm-hmm. How much is that going to cost? How many of those can you afford? And that's your target, right? That's your financial target for warranty expense, essentially. And that translates into, well, how many are allowed to fail over that duration?
Right.
And then I often hear it in companies. And the best example I ever had was when I was at HP with the inkjet printer group, is they would have, I think they had a 1-year or 2-year warranty on inkjet printers on the mechanisms themselves. But they designed them so that they would last 5 years Because the idea was, is you get a box on your table and you just keep putting ink in it. Okay, they didn't make
Fred,
money
what was
selling
the
printers.
Element that they said, this is going to last 5 years, this one element, or these combination of elements and failure mechanisms going to extend out to 5 years, or we know that they will not fail at a rate of higher than 5% over the five, you know.
That's what they would do. They would say,
okay.
So it was like an office. They would say, in the marketing requirement or in the product requirements document, the way it would be phrased would be, we're going to do these functions, right? Print paper
right.
and do this stuff.
Right.
Whole list in the home and home office environment in North America and Europe or wherever they detail right. out where the market was and
different
stuff
humidity
like that.
Conditions, whatever.
Well, no, they didn't get into all that. They got into just kind of here's the market. And now that we had other documents that detailed out all the weather and all the use conditions and all the other happy stuff. I mean, even down to how many pages per day you would print.
Right.
In different markets and regions and stuff. It was pretty cool.
Okay.
But then the third part, which I've seen scattered all over other documents, but here they would go, all right, in the first month, we have no more than 0.5% fail, right? So 99.5% reliability over 30 days from installation or purchase, I think is what they targeted. And that was the
right.
early life target. And then they right. would say, 98% reliable out for the warranty period, which was, I think, 2 years, and no more than 90% or 90% reliable over 5 years. And that was the target. That was the goal or the objective or whatever. That was the guidance
yeah.
in the requirements document.
Right.
So what's wrong with that? You were
going to challenge me. Well, I'm just telling you,
here.
Fred, do you know what mechanism is going to cause or combination of mechanisms has a limited life of less than 5 years or is going to wear? Now, mechanics, yeah, you can measure the wheels, the transport, that belt that would move the head across. Maybe that's what you're counting on is being the wear out mechanism. With the HP printers, you throw away the actual print head every time you change the cartridge.
No,
you used to come with that.
Now they're not doing it as much. And they're also
my printer has an ink cartridge and the head stays the same.
Well,
okay.
How old is your printer?
Well, it's only 3 years old, maybe.
You got one of those
anyway,
cheap ones.
It's a
yeah,
office
so what? Truck. So what? In setting the specification, don't need to know what fails. I really don't care.
Well, you do need to know what is going
to limit. I don't need to know it to set the specification.
Or limit the reliability of this product.
No, I don't.
Why don't you?
Because it's a guidance, a target,
a
specification.
Why wouldn't the target be zero failures?
Well, because it's impossible. It's absolutely, totally impossible to go to zero failures.
Okay.
Totally impossible.
I agree because customers abuse the product.
Well,
I'd say the printer sitting in a window of a seaside resort, you know, out with the salt spray, is that abuse? I don't know, but that's going to cause probably some lack of. It's like when I look at pinball machines at a coastal beachfront place versus here up in Colorado where it's no humidity at all, and I know that the corrosion problems are going to be accelerated, but
yeah.
I don't know where those corrosion problems are going to manifest
right.
a failure.
But why do you need to know that when you're setting the requirement? This is an interpretation of what you think the customer wants, right?
Well, the customer doesn't want a failure, so why are you saying that 5%?
Well, it has to be economical. If we say absolutely no failures, we make it triple redundant and we swap out everything every year, it becomes prohibitive. If we say absolutely no failure, it's not marketable.
No. Right.
Right?
No.
So we don't.
Well,
we set a reasonable goal that interprets what a customer would want.
Yeah, but a customer doesn't want failure. So to hear 5% failure, well, if he's the one that has the 5% that fail, he's not going to be. It's 100% to him.
I know that's too bad.
we're setting
functions
as reliable as possible with standard materials and processes, and trying to remove all those elements we can find and know about or can find that will limit this reliability or cause a potential. And right. if it's talking about a gear or motor, then yes, we maybe have a measurable life because we're going to have a mechanical wear out and consumption of material. And that inherently, that's not true with solid state electronics. And maybe
well,
some
I'm buttons. Not talking about technology here, Kirk. I'm not talking about failure mechanisms. I'm not talking okay. about any of that stuff.
I know, but to come up with these goals, what you're talking about is saying we would desire this to be reliable or for 5 years operate and only have a 5% failure rate over those 5 years.
What's wrong
okay.
with that?
Okay. That's great, I guess. But I might say, why did they decide on 5%, not 2%? Is there a material that they would be using that would drive them from 5% to 2%? Is there something that would add? Would they get higher rated? You know, I don't know what, you know, where they would get their guidance on the design before they have a product or actual prototype of a product, where they would get the guidance or direction or trade-off information that they would have to do to say, this is going to be more reliable, this is going to be less reliable, and this is the quantitative amount that this is going to result
in. This has nothing, Kirk, this discussion has nothing to do with measuring reliability. It's not the point.
Okay.
Right? And no, it's not. So
all right.
If we're going to market, right? Think of the example of, what was it, Kia, or it was a Korean company years ago that changed their I think it was the drivetrain warranty for their vehicles. Everybody else was doing like 2 years or 3 years or something like that, and they went to 10 years. Mm-hmm. They didn't make a car that lasted 10 years, right? They didn't. They didn't make a car that was any better than anybody else's.
Well, it lasted 10 years, maybe.
Maybe.
Probably.
But they took a huge risk, and it was a trade-off between going to the market and saying, hey, we're going to design a product that is going to last this long, and we're going to stand behind it for that long.
And right. So they made an investment up front.
No, they made it after they figured out what failed. That's a different story, right? They made a promise, a business decision, to say we need to set this as our goal, and it makes a difference in our market. And it had to be big enough of a change. If they went to 4 years, nobody would have cared, right? But they went to 10. They more than tripled the going rate.
Right.
Right. And they forced themselves. Now, the same story happened at HP. When they first got into consumer products in the 80s, early 80s and into the 90s, when they were starting to make more and more consumer-based products, all of their products had a three-month warranty. And in the 80s, their goal was to reduce warranty costs, right? They were paying a lot of money in warranty, and it was getting bigger as they got more and more in consumer products. Mm-hmm. And so what Dick Moss did is he recommended that they go to a one-year warranty in all their products.
Okay.
Right? And have a relatively low failure rate over a 1 year for a warranty rate. So they passed that by edict from the CEO office, said all warranties are a minimum of 1 year now, period. And you have to still be profitable, right? So they made all that stuff happen. So what do you think happened in the organization because of the tripling or quadrupling of the warranty requirement?
I think they started looking more carefully at their field failures. What was causing failures?
They also started adding more robustness into their design, adding more margin.
How did they do that, Fred?
They went from plastic to metal. They used more higher D ratings on components. They used anywhere there was a doubt, they tested it, right? But they, instead of going, oh, that's good enough, and this is the literal story I've heard over and over again from across the company, is whenever there was a doubt, we asked, will this impact warranty? Will this last a year? And they asked more questions of their vendors, because 3 months was a no-brainer. A year, we got to ask about this. And it was materials and gears and motors and electronics and you name it. And this is the 80s, right? So it's not like today's electronics. Mm-hmm. And so, but it brought reliability into the discussion along with cost and time to market and functions. And it became a part of the decision-making about, is this the right product or not? Now, there's one of the things that's interesting about engineers is if there's uncertainty, they pad it a little bit, put a little margin in there, put a safety factor on it.
Right. Right? And that's what we talk about, stress strength margins.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And so by changing the requirement, not just saying be as good as or better than the last time or be as good as you can, you made it, if you don't hit this target, it's going to cost us money. And here's the target. And so the engineers, when there was doubt, put margin in. And the products at with the 1 year, it was like 2-3 years after they started this, they looked at the numbers to say, did this help us or hurt us? The products with a 1 year warranty actually had an overall lower warranty cost than the products that had a 3 month warranty.
Yeah.
You know,
well, some of that might be motivated by the customer and, you know, replacement of a, anyway, That's great.
But that's the purpose of setting
a business. The company made a bit, had a business motivation, a monetary motivation to make a more reliable product, and it saved them money. I just question what did they know was going to cause that failure rate to increase or decrease? Because that, to me, is comes from an understanding of the field, and you just talked about it with maybe Kia. Waiting, you know, going ahead and issuing a long warranty, then quickly looking at the first early returns and trying to design them out or
well, no, I think it's more subtle than that, Kirk. I think it's way more subtle than that in waiting for, that's the Microsoft method, wait for failures to occur. If you're fancy, you go to halt and you force failures to occur.
Yeah. Right?
But no, that's too late. That's way too late. The change in the requirement that, hey, this product has to be reliable. This is an important critical factor in our requirements, and we're making it the uncertainty of will it last long enough with a low enough failure rate. Just the knowledge of that uncertainty is enough to create a more reliable product. Designers
the knowledge
do not,
of that uncertainty. That isn't that an oxymoron?
No. Just knowing you don't know, right? Whereas before they didn't care. They didn't know they didn't know. They didn't care that they didn't know. But now we know when somebody walks up to you and says, will this thing last 10 years? And you're like, well, I don't know. Let's find out. Let's watch it for 10 years. Well, that uncertainty is enough to put safety margin in designs. And those decisions are made well before we get a prototype, right? So by influencing those early decisions, the architectures, the material selections, the initial design, big design decisions that frame how a product is going to be built, those decisions are influenced by that very early specification, and nobody has measured anything yet. We don't know what fails, and we hope nothing does, but they're because there's too much uncertainty, we can't measure it. We don't know how to measure 3 months, much less a year. So they put more margin in it. And they being the design teams and the programs to add a bit of assurance that they've got margin.
I guess the frame of reference from Holt and Haas is build as much margin because, I mean, again, I don't know. You know, you talk about specifications. I mean, we've talked about it with Apple iPhone 4, you know, the specification was 35C.
That wasn't the spec. Well, that was on the data sheet. That's not an internal spec.
That's not an internal spec to who?
The design team.
No,
that's on the side of the box. That's a marketing. That's a marketing thing.
Well, yeah. Okay. Whatever, wherever it came from, it was told to the customer, this phone's operating conditions are 35C to 0C. In other words, 32F. To 95 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, stay out of the saunas and don't go
and
in
yeah,
the
yeah, so it was a ridiculous spec. It was just absurd that because you have your phone in your pocket all the time. And this was just it was just a blanket spec that was thrown across most consumer electronics. And it actually caused a loss of sales in some large computer companies because they couldn't sell because somebody came up, you know, with the Arrhenius, which is the Arrhenius, was the basis of what they thought would cause higher rates of failure. And that's
I don't think so. I don't think it's dealing with the equation with what the failures were or not going to be. I think like way too many companies, they're way too busy and they go to some standard that says for consumer products, go from 0 to 35. And they're like, okay, well, I don't have to think about it anymore. Here's the standard. Let's do that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the way a lot of components are, you know, they're not necessarily have anything to do with the physics of the component or its capabilities. Mm-mm. And, you know, it's just because there's a marketing thing. So that's, again,
there
I don't know.
There are things that do matter. I'm working with a product now that it uses an antifreeze in a cooling system. And when you get antifreeze too cold, it gets sludgy. It doesn't move very well.
Right.
You either need a really strong pump to move it around.
Right. Or, you're talking about a mechanical system that will have a higher load in that condition and, you know, has a limitation, physical limitation of that.
Now, I'm going to come back at you with this electronics. You always harp on electronics. Copper changes its conductivity with temperature.
Absolutely.
It does,
absolutely.
Right?
So for
a very high-speed circuit on a very high-speed network device, the temperature is critical.
It is.
Right? So if you go outside of that realm, you don't timing doesn't work and your product doesn't work at those speeds. So
Depending on the temperature sensitivity of that system.
Yeah. And if they don't design it right, if they don't design it well and they don't control it right, it's screwed, right? If they drift out of their conductivity range for that particular circuit's timing, it's a failure.
Absolutely. Period. Yes, I write about this in the book about how thermal stress can help you find timing issues.
Yeah.
And thermal cycling and rapid thermal cycling can differentiate between because of the impedance and physical separation and board layers and lots of other factors, just not just the conductor's impedance, but many other things change in semiconductors and the conduction of signals. And the eye diagram has gotten quite with jitter and skew. It's been it looks like a little tiny window in a big messy noisy circuit. So yes, it's very sensitive, and that's why I encourage using rapid thermal stress to find those things, signal integrity issues, timing, race conditions. There's a lot of things that haven't been done because nobody thinks of this or nobody wants to try this or compare with what their field reliability problems have been when it comes to intermittent and functional and operational reliability, because you can always reboot the machine, you can reset it, comes back normal. Usually
that's a failure in some markets.
It's a failure, no question about it. Right.
But the point is you just because you can test it in doesn't mean it's the best place to design it in, right? You can't wait that long to change your design. You have to start this process early.
Test design guidelines and rules, giving yourself some margin for variation. You know that, you know, when we were in engineering school, they talked about the variability of beta, transistor betas, amplification factors, and it varied widely. Mm-hmm. And you had to design your circuit to tolerate this and just use a very small portion of that capability in the transistor and make sure that it wasn't going to be very sensitive to the wide variation in the betas. And that was something early. I mean, this was back in the 70s that I learned on transistor design.
That set of decisions, right, that approach and modeling does not rely on Hult testing to prove that they need to fix something. It helps. Don't get me wrong. But I think the intention of setting clear, very specific, tied to your customer, tied to your business, reliability specifications that are fully stated helps to guide or promote making decisions that get you a product that is robust from the start. And then you can shake out some more, no pun intended, in a halt.
Right.
But the idea is that way too much happens before we get a first prototype that locks in and blocks us into certain reliability performance.
Yes.
And we have the reliability specification in and of itself is a mechanism to help control and improve that ability to design a robust product.
Right.
Are you okay with that?
I am, Fred.
All right,
The fact is, very few products are brand new technologies never been seen before.
Well, which makes setting the specs a lot easier.
So they usually, most companies that have produced a product have engineers experience with the past or previous or predecessor products type and what those failure mechanisms are. And they design away from failure. We've talked about this before. So the things that they don't design away from are the things they don't really know will fail. And it's a lot of interactions, might be where a cable connector is. There's a lot of, just as we've talked about, there's thousands of ways it can fail. And I don't know how we account for customer abuse. I mean, again, you look at a life cycle profile of a standard smartphone or, you know, cell phone, and I don't know how you'd say how many times are people going to drop it from 4 feet, 5 feet out of a car window. Should it survive? No. I mean, those kinds of things,
They never happen.
Yeah. So I'm just saying I look from a really different frame of reference that the goal should be to have as low failures, and your background, what you should know is how your products failed in the past, what failed in the past, where were the weak links in that product, and things that you may not be able to change too much. If it's rubber on a tire to make the tire last 200,000 miles, obviously that's not needed. You'll have so many trade-offs for that tire to make tread thick enough, although I'm sure you could, or make it out of steel, something like that. I don't know.
Right. If you don't want a nice, smooth ride, you could make it out of something else. Yeah.
Right. So yes, in mechanics, you know, again, I look at mechanics as having consumable materials a lot of times, and you do have limitations on how long and how much material, but you make a reservoir material so that you can withstand the worst case, or hopefully the outlier use, worst use environment. But again, it's a stress strength distribution in that. I just think every company should try and make a lowest, you know, it's saying there's allowable 5% failure. It's not allowable. It's a goal. Yeah, you should try to make it even more reliable than 5%
failure. Oh, yeah, I agree with you on that. But if you don't set a goal at all, then every designer makes up their own fiction of how good's good enough.
Yeah, if he knows what's going to say, oh, this is not going to work as well, or this is going to fail. I mean, I don't see engineers doing that, saying
definitely.
I don't see saying this is going to fail after 3 years because this, the life of this capacitor or this life of this thing is only so long.
No. It's not down to that detail, but it's I don't have to worry about that. I don't need to do the worst case analysis. I don't need to do the analysis. I don't need to ask the questions of the vendor. I just want the cheapest part because cost is important. And I'm going to go the lowest. That's very, very real.
That's your procurement department.
No. It's the engineer selecting the parts. I've seen it many times. And then the guy next to him is going, oh, we need to make this thing really work. And I'm buying the gold-plated stuff and everything.
After that engineer's finished designing, it's gone into manufacturing, it's been manufactured a few months. The procurement guy says, oh, this guy came with a part. It's 3 cents. You know, I buy this diode. It's half a cent less. And that'll save
same
us.
Same form,
you know,
fit, and function. Yeah.
Same quote.
Yeah,
same
that's a whole different topic. Yeah, that's okay. A whole other topic.
These are the things that cause products to fail. And I don't know how you – that's my take. Yeah. So I guess admirable that you want to set a goal of some percentage, but I would say, why do you want any of them to fail? We had a joke about, you know, the Japanese would say, here's your 100 parts, and here's the 5 you wanted –
you wanted to have failed.
Yeah, because we don't have things that we're not trying to create. You know, we've got SBC, we've got Six Sigma. We don't make defective parts because our process is so highly controlled. So, you know, it's...
Yeah, that's yet another whole topic there.
The reliability definition, the assumption is specified conditions in a specified period of time. And I don't think, again, you can specify conditions like supposedly Apple did with the iPhone, 35C to zero. Okay, those are specified conditions to the customer. Those were published officially in their manuals.
So?
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't mean I'm not saying
that. If a customer read that and believed it, he said, "I can't use this until if I take it out of my pocket, I got to let it cool off 2 degrees because my body can't.
The point is that the specifications are are there to help people make decisions. Doesn't mean they're right or wrong, right? That's a whole different discussion. It's an iterative business process to say, do I have the right specs? Do I have the right functions? Do I have the right weight? Do I have the right cost? Do I have the right, all of these other elements,
all
of, right?
All those other things.
But reliability,
the right functions,
too. Reliability,
the right
too.
Costs.
Not everybody makes the most reliable. Let's use your blender examples. Not everybody makes the most reliable blender, right? But you can buy
Nobody
one.
Makes a reliable blender.
They only cost $20, then it does. You know, that's a choice.
Yeah,
but when you really, really want that margarita and your blender just busted, you don't have time to go to the store.
Yeah, you got to go manual.
Right.
So
if it's really important for you, you spend the $500 and you can get an industrial grade one, right?
Well, sure. You could get a commercial, restaurant grade or whatever.
Right.
You could
possibly get. It probably would last a Saturday or two down in your house.
Right.
So
and it
you'd
might
be
cost
fine.
A little more.
Yeah.
But one thing that's impressing me about these $5 outdoor lights here in Colorado, where they're outdoor, they've got a solar cell, a nickel metal hydride battery, and probably a control for charging, discharging, and turning on, photo cell. They've got sensors. I've got them out in my yard. They're $5, and they've lasted four years. They turn on every night. And here you are, you know, minus 20 to maybe 95 degrees Fahrenheit.
All in one day.
All year. Yeah, all in one day. Sometimes. For 4 years, they've been outdoor, rained on. They're $5. They couldn't even afford. I'm sure they couldn't afford hall testing, although I would have done it in design phase maybe. But I'm sure it probably wasn't, and it's done quite well. And, it, you know, doesn't have any moving parts, no mechanicals. But as far as cheap electronics, I mean, it doesn't necessarily correlate to cost always. I don't think you can make inexpensive but reliable systems, and that's why, you know, if you know what's going to fail and you say, okay, this is allowable or not allowable or whatever, there can be that for you. You've got to replace filters. You've got to replace sometimes sensors, like oxygen sensors, for when we would have oxygen sensors in the halt rooms. They would wear out, a chemical-based mechanism or chemical device. Yes, all those things are calculable and understandable, and that's what should be focused on. Mechanics, motors, brushes, anything that has friction and wear. Yeah, they're going to have limited life. And then you have to have the reservoir material to extend that. Anything else, I don't know. I think, you know, that's, again, a lot of manufacturing issues, a lot of procurement, changing parts when you needed. If it was a little change, we didn't think it'd affect your product. All those things happen. It's a very dynamic environment. And, you know, I think anybody, any company, warranty should be a cost, and they should think about reducing it, although sometimes the product is too low cost. I couldn't see them worrying about too much about these outdoor, cheap outdoor rechargeable solar lights. But there's thousands of them out there, millions.
Yeah, yeah. No,
and they're doing great.
Right. So,
all right, Fred.
Right. I'm going to set specifications the way I want to, and you can.
Good.
Right, we're done.
And I want to talk to the engineers who say, oh, yeah, this is going to fail.
Right. So let's ask our listeners, you know, so. How do you set specs? You know, is it incorporated? Is it part of the engineering requirements document? Is it useful or not? You know, how do you guys use it? Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a couple of different forms and ways to get in touch with us there. Or you can find us on LinkedIn or on our about pages. We all have contact info. So we'd love to hear from you. What's
feedback
working for you?
Feedback always helps.
Yeah, yes, certainly
feedback
does.
Feedback always helps.
Yeah. So how... Yeah, especially when we start failing, then it's, we want to know. All right, Kirk. Talk to you later.
Right. Okay, Fred. Talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.